Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Born December 12th in Manhattan and raised in Little Italy and Staten Island, New York, our next guest is a man of many life experiences. He overcame polio as a child, spent time as a teen working as a runner for mob boss Frank Costello, going on to act in the movie classic, The Godfather. He's owned a club and casino in Las Vegas, owned his own wine brand, worked as an actor in television and film, had sex with Marilyn Monroe. And that's just scratching the surface of one of the most interesting life stories we've ever heard, as told in his book, Hollywood Godfather, My Life in Movies and the Mob, which is being turned into a 10-part miniseries. And you can hear him every week on his Hollywood Godfather podcast on iTunes, Spotify and more. Please welcome, friend of the show, Gianni Russo.
How have you been, Jenny?
I've been unbelievable, man. How you doing?
Good, man. You, everybody's safe. You're healthy. Everybody's good in your family.
Oh my God! Yeah, thank God.
Good. Yep. Yeah. So
it's an interesting time. This is my second pandemic. As you mentioned earlier, I had polio as a kid.
Yeah.
This is a lot easier because when I had polio, I was quarantined for 5 years. Here, I can at least go out, walk the streets. I do 3 or 4 miles every other day in New York. It's like a ghost town, so you don't even need social distance.
Yeah, I think about you when in those stories at the hospital in quarantine, when you hear the anti-vax and anti-vaxxers and the anti-vaccination people. I'm like, really? You think that's a good idea? Do you? You think that's vaccinations are bad? It's a crazy idea when I hear that.
Oh my God! And I was so disappointed because I didn't get picked. They split our ward in half. There was 20 beds. 10 got it, 10 didn't. And when I didn't get it, I'm saying, why is God doing this to me?
Sure, he's just a little boy.
The people that got it, their first batch of vaccine, it escalated their virus and they all died.
Oh, well, that's it. There you go. And how old were you? How old were you when you were in that hospital?
I went in, I know it to the day, I'll never forget it. I went in August 7, 1949. I was 6.5 years old.
Just out of a world war, and just a little boy. And I mean, you grow up fast. I mean, there were bad guys in there, and I.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it's.
It was a great 5 years education. I mean, it sounds terrible, but I wouldn't change one day of my life, including those 5 years, because I don't know where I would be if I didn't go through that. Didn't start selling ballpoint pens in the street. Met Costello. And my life never stopped, and it's still going. I mean, I'll be 78 this December 12th, and now they're doing a 10-hour miniseries with Colin Wilson, who just got nominated for Star Wars, Mandalorian. He got 15 Emmy nominations, and I got Nick Vallelonga, who won the Oscar for Best Picture, Best Screenplay for Green Book. He's writing them. Nick Cantor, who did the original Goodfellow, is producing. I mean, it's just insane, my life.
It's fantastic because this is going to come to fruition now because it can only be, you couldn't do a movie in 90 minutes or more even. It's too much. And now you're going to have to get down to cutting and trimming some of the stories. Like, you know, people don't know. Like, we haven't even gotten into the place where you guys, you know, this would have been... In the 70s, you were laundering money through the Vatican. You were at two popes' funerals. I mean, the pictures are in there. And
Oh, yeah, no, it's all crazy. That's the funniest thing. When you read the book, and then you turn the page, and then there's pictures to prove it.
Yeah.
The stories are so outlandish, and they're so varied in the different hats I've worn as even careers as growing up, that you say, come on, how could this be true? But like you say, I have 35. I know you. Are you still coming to New York for Thanksgiving?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As long as they're allowing it and everybody says it's safe, absolutely I am.
Well, that's right. You got to worry about it. Yeah, but if you come, I promise you, I want you to come to my house for dinner.
I would love it.
I have 3,500 photographs in my scrapbook in my living room.
Listen, you're going to have to throw me out. I'll bring some booze and we'll go through it because it's, you know, I'm looking at these photographs of you and Pope John Paul II, and I'm reading these stories about them laundering money for you guys, and the involvement, the strange coincidence of an Iranian general knowing your ex-wife's gynecologist was his daughter, and that suddenly it leads you into the middle of the Shah Ayatollah overthrow.
I mean, that was probably the craziest thing I ever did, because we moved 86 million of the Shah's money in 3 hours.
That's,
which isn't, when you think about it, how could you even do that?
Well, you guys, you have to you think about all the problems that can happen with this. You've got some military that's staying, some that's going. You're trying to get money out of the country as this overthrow is happening. You're in the middle of the whole thing because they've reached out to you because they know you can launder this real. But you don't know at any point when it's going to go bad, who's going to rat who out, and when it's going to really blow up, and then everybody gets erased.
Well, I tell you, if we didn't charter a plane from Alitalia, which was my partner Nick Nitti's idea, we flew down to Sicily and picked a crew, some cousins and friends. We came back with them on the plane, but if we were flying any other flag on that plane, American or even British, they would have shot it down. They were already closing down the airport.
Yeah.
As we were going towards the airport.
You guys picked the money up. You see the military pulls past you, which the first thing they do is, when there's a coup, they take care of the TV, the news, all the media, and the airport shut down. They lock it all down.
Right.
And right. You guys have to go, hey, you pass these guys. We got to get there before they get there.
Well, I was the tail car. Nick was in the front. We had six different cars. We took down six banks at 2:30 in the afternoon. We cleaned six banks out simultaneously in a half hour, and we had wheels up at 3:30. And thank God, this kid needed money. And I just met this kid. I can't believe it. I'm doing a book signing in Chicago. I haven't seen him since the late 70s. And he came up to me. And he's looking at me, he says, do you remember me? And I said, no, your face looks familiar. He was the driver of my van. I reached in the bag. I don't know how much money. I just took a fistful of the money. I said, you got to make a right-hand turn now. He said, what do you mean? I said, take that fence down. We're never going to get on that plane. And he went right to it, dragged the fence all the way to the plane. We jumped out, threw the duffel bags on the plane, and the wheels were out, man, because we were already cleared by the tower. I mean, that's how strategic this whole operation was.
Well, and the fact that lieutenant didn't at the end, because, you know, that's fairly suspect that he's going to stay behind with a new boss. I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, that's what the only thing, like you said, once they grabbed him, it was like hours later. I don't know why, but he already buried the money. He knew where he buried it. And he did a year in jail. And then he got out, found the money, and worked his way through Europe and came to Chicago. And he's living there happily ever after. He has two kids.
That's so great.
A great ending even there.
Yeah. And then, well, you provided that for him. I mean, without the money, it wouldn't have gone that way, you know. And, you think this. So then you're set for life. This is going to make you liquid for the rest of your life at 35. It was January 19th, 1979, I believe, when you guys took off.
Yep.
And
yep.
You get back. You make it happen. And bam, it's on. Now you're 35 years old. What do? You have enough money now from that to live the rest of your life. But that's not going to be it. You decided you have to go to Vegas. You're going to buy where the MGM now sits and buy McCarran. And you're going to do your casino and your hotel.
Right. Thank God for Jimmy Carter, because his administration basically saved me from going to jail. because I just borrowed $73 million from the Teamsters money. Oof. And they had that all on wiretape. The FBI, I didn't realize, had the Caucus Savella's house right where you are in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bugged. And they had me on the tape and all of that. So they were waiting for me to take the second draw. The first draw, I used my own money for the footings and foundations of my hotel. And then Carter made the announcement. That's when the construction money loans went to 19%.
Yeah.
So I used Ernst & Young's advice. And they said, Mr. Russo, we suggest you postpone building the hotel right now. I said, why? He said, well, you're going to have to remain 91% occupied just to service the debt. So I used that once I found out that I was bugged and they're waiting for me to take the drawdown. I'd be doing 20 years in Leavenworth. So.
Yeah, 99-year lease, and you got to get out of this. So now you go to the guy and you're like, hey, I can't pay this. But he's not worried because he thinks he has a 99-year lease.
Right.
Yeah, and then there was an unfortunate fire.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. All the construction trailers burnt down.
These things happen.
They call it Jewish lightning.
Yeah. So you're out of that, but you know, you literally go from that story. I'm reading this, and you and Sinatra end up at Ronald Reagan's birthday party.
Yeah, well, I got close to Frank. You know, I'm the only person in the world that could say Marlon Brando was my only acting teacher. Frank Sinatra was my only singing teacher. And Marilyn Monroe taught me how to be a man at 16. Yeah. I don't know who can say that.
Nobody. Nobody. Nobody can. Listen, this leads into, this also goes into surviving an attack with a bottle, 78 stitches, but it turns out to be, and we'll get to this in a moment, you know, it turns out to be one of the most notorious drug manufacturers in the world, drug lord, his guy, and it almost gets you killed.
Well, yeah, I didn't. I never thought I'd get out of it because, well, once they had the, in my club called State Street, which was a haven for every celebrity, political, anybody, you name them, they were at State Street. I opened 12 hours a day, 6 at night to 6 in the morning, with a casino, and who's who of the world were there. And this guy comes in with a girl, and I see him, you know, tipping everybody, which is, we see that all the time because they went at the best table. And so, and Steve Sciarippa from Soprano and now Blue Bloods fame was my doorman. He was going to UNLV, University of Nevada, and I had a lot of those guys. And Steve was a big guy. We all know him from Sopranos.
Sure.
So I put him in a tuxedo. He was perfect. So I called the door. I said, Steve, who's the guy? They said, I don't know. He said, Caesar sent him over. I said, how'd they rate him? Because we had a lot of house accounts because when late at night there was no place to eat but my club. All the coffee shops and all that. These guys didn't want to go there. So they gave him a 5-star rating. I mean, in an hour, his check was up to $1,800. We sent him a bottle of Cristal, a bottle of Louis XIII, 2 ounces of caviar, pate. I mean, this guy was ready to go. And then he gets the bottle of Cristal. He breaks it and stabs his date in the face. Thank God he missed her eye.
Yeah.
And so I called Steve back. I said, Steve, get over to table 7. He said, I ain't going over there, man. That guy's nuts. I said, well, that's what I hired you for. So I wound up going over there and getting involved, and I didn't know he had the bottle in his hand yet. And I'm telling him, you hear these the sirens?
Yeah.
They're not ambulances coming for you. These are cops. Now get out of here. You know, I don't want any trouble with you. Just leave. I didn't know who he was. He's Noman. I said, what do you mean, Noman? Where the hell are you from? He said, you don't want to know. And with that, he goes for me, but I'm agile enough. I jump back. Instead of getting my jugular with the bottle, he got the right around my chin. And now my chin is hanging, like you pointed out, 87 stitches.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, pal, I'm going to tell you one more time. Either you walk out that door or you're going out in a black bag. He said, F you. And so I put two right between his eyes. I'm seeing a hole in this man's head. Only seconds are going by, but I'm saying, what the hell is this? I found out later from the coroner, because how'd the guy keep standing? He was so high on coke. That's why you always shoot him behind the ear. He'll go right down.
Yeah, but
then only to find out, you know, he was an underboss to Pablo Escobar.
Oof. And then it starts. That's the, you know, it's one thing to survive that. and realize you just need a much bigger caliber gun. But
yeah, hello. I moved up from a 25 to 38 immediately.
So now you got to find some way to make this right. You got to deal with this. I mean, now it's John Gotti, it's Pablo, it's everybody's involved now.
What happened? What I found out, they were Marielitos. So I got someone who knew about that culture, and they said the biggest problem you're going to have, he was going to avenge his brother's death, Lorenzo Morales' brother, and he was the other boss to Pablo. And they said to me, they'll kill your dogs, your neighbor, your kids, your friends first. And I'm saying, I can't let this happen. I already had 9 kids by that time.
Yeah.
So I fly to see John. And John couldn't wait to make that arrangement for me to go because he thought I'd never come back.
Be the end of you, yeah.
Yeah, that would be it. Because he and I always had a love-hate friendship. Because if it ain't about John, John don't want you in the room. And the Godfather fame and all, he couldn't handle it because he was the real Godfather and I was the acting Godfather. And nobody really liked it. He didn't like it. So he thought, this is it. Get him out of here, and I'll never see him again.
I would never have got on that plane. Oh, I just the balls to get on that plane.
Oh, my God, forget about it. I said 10 novenas. The only company thing, he wanted me to meet him in this church in Bogota. So I went in the church, and there was only one guy, and I didn't know who he was yet, up at the altar. And as I'm walking down the aisle, as I pass certain pews, people would sit up with rifles. The whole church was loaded with about 20 armed guys of Pablo Escobar, and he was praying in front of a saint I never saw again. It was like a blessed mother with her hands out to hell, and people were burning in hell that she was trying to help them out. And when I got close, I kept smelling flesh. He was burning his fingertips on the candles.
Crazy.
And I found out later why he was doing it. So everybody in his crew had no fingerprints.
It's that crazy combination of there's a criminality that's being covered for, but then there's a spirituality, but almost like it's more superstition. It's just superstition. And these guys, they take it very seriously, and so they put a they put a hood over your head.
Right,
which you think you got to think that's it. This is the end.
Yeah. Well, when I woke up, I mean the stench in that room. There were body bags laying all around the place, and it was just a torture chamber that he created in that new house that was supposed to be the prison. That was the deal he made. He built his own prison, basically.
Right. Right.
And after a few hours or days, I don't even remember. Here comes one guy. Standing in front of me, dressed to the nines, clean, shot, polished shoes, not in army fatigues, and he has a book in his hand. And I look up because I'm like slumped over, and I see I'm waist high, and I see the book, and it's The Making of the Godfather. And all of a sudden, a voice says to me, "Why don't you tell me you were Carlo in the Godfather? I love that movie." He says, "Clean him up and bring him up to the house," and that was it. And then I had dinner with him hours later, and he said to me, he says, "Why did you come here? You knew you were going to get killed." I said, "I did my homework. I know you had a daughter, and he had one daughter at the time, and I had one daughter, Gia. And I said, what would you do to save your daughter's life?" And he got up from the table, came over, and gave me a hug. He says, "You have some balls." I said, "No, I said, I'm a father of kids. I can't have you people massacring me." He said, "I'll straighten this out. But before you go, could you do me a favor?" I said, "Whatever you want me to do." I thought maybe he wanted me to wash the car or cut the grass. What kind of favor can I do this guy? He said, "I want to do the closing scene of The Godfather."
I said, "Jesus Christ, man. Come on. That's
I'm
so
gonna
crazy.
Play Michael. You're Carlo, obviously." So he gets up, and he has a couple of guys at the door already, and we do the scene where he walks into the dining room we're in, and I'm sitting at the chair, and he says, "Carlo, you got to answer for Santini." So I do the scene. "Michael, you got it all wrong. Come on, Mike." He says, come on, Carlo, you think I'm going to make my wife, my daughter, my sister a widow? No, Carlo, you're out of the family business. And we do the whole thing. He hands me the ticket. I'm looking at the ticket. This time I'm really looking at the ticket to see if I'm getting
Is this real?
Not a movie. And then they walk me to the car, and I'm saying to myself, this is how he's going to kill me.
Yeah.
This maniac, he opens the front door for me to get in the car. As soon as I get in the car, there wasn't just Clemenza in the back seat. There was two guys of his guys.
Yeah.
And they said, hello, Carlo.
You're like, yeah.
And they all bust out laughing. He gives me a hug. He said, get out of here.
Jesus Christ.
To the airport. I couldn't believe it.
The greatest practical joke of all time, because that's when they killed Carlo. If you, anybody hasn't seen the movie, hello, Carlo. They literally go run and shoot at the end of it. And it's crazy. And then you, but man, as soon as you get to Miami, it's on. There's DEA agent wanting to know what's going on.
Well, you know, like we see in the movies, I'm living a movie. The airline hostess say, please, everybody, seat as much close. We're going to lower the gate because at that time there was a smaller plane. They lowered the stairs, and there's people getting on the plane, so we're remain seated. So they get on the plane. The guy picks up the intercom. He says, Gianni Russo, raise your hand. I said, oh, what the hell now? So I raise my hand. They come on. They put handcuffs on me and walk me off the plane and put me on another plane that's right on the tarmac, and nobody's talking to me. So we're in the air about half hour, and I said, I have to go to the bathroom. Can I go to the bathroom? So they uncuffed me. I said, where am I going to go? We're 3,500 feet up. So I walk into the bathroom, and I come out. There's a guy watching the door, and he says, answer one question for me. I said, of course, what? He said, you were calling the Godfather. I'm saying to myself, this friggin' movie, I love it. It's saving my life. Then we get back, and we start talking. They're talking about the movie. So I'm thinking, hey, I said, you know, what's this all about? Well, we can't tell you that. I said, okay. So when we get to headquarters, the DEA in Washington, I find out they didn't even know what went on with me. They're telling me they saw me with John Gotti, they saw me with Noriega, they saw me with Pablo Escobar, and I walk out and fly back. They thought I was the new connection.
Jesus.
For, you know, America.
Yeah.
I said, no. I said, I killed a guy in Vegas. They said, what? I said, I killed a guy. The feds didn't even look into that.
Yeah.
Because it was a state thing. It was, you know, it was publicity on it, but they weren't paying attention to it.
Yeah, they got pictures of you with the Ravenite, but they don't know that you killed one of his guys. It's, that's it. That's the thing, right? It's,
that's how crazy. So they questioned me about an hour or two. They said, okay, you can go. I said, what do you mean, you can go? I'm in Washington. I was going to Vegas. He said, well, there's no case here, so we're not involved with this. So then, I mean, I just used it as an example. But then I fly back to Vegas, and Jesus, it was insane. A crazy time. So
back to the movie. Like when that scene comes out, like you weren't supposed to kick the windshield completely out of the car, but you played it so well. Like it's funny because I watched the movie 2 weeks ago again, and that scene came up, and I remember you telling me about that. Like, you know, you really went after that scene and took the whole thing over.
Well, the thing with the windshield, it was my first movie, and this is my grand finale. I want to make it great. And we tried everything. And then Coppola had the camera mounted on the hood of the car. So, I mean, that's why you could see me kicking that viciously. And those old car windshields had plastic in the safety glass, not like they are today. So to break that, but what the layman don't realize, I break it, I go through, my feet go out the window, but we did that take about four times. There's no way to pull your feet back in because all below you are all this jagged glass. So the back of my legs were cut up. They had to change my pants like four times.
I
figure this is between the beating with Jimmy Caan and breaking two ribs and chipping my elbow, cutting up my legs. I said to myself, you know, I'm only doing love scenes from now on. This is my first movie. I ain't doing this.
Well, you just, you know, you, and then you think about these connections, real life to movies. And, you know, we've all seen Goodfellas. We've all seen Casino. You know, the Casino movie shows Joe Pesci as Spilatro.
Yeah, and Spilatro shot up my house.
Yeah, you guys got sideways. And if you remember the movie, it was Lefty Rosenthal, and was his guy, and then he got set up by the mob, and he had the hole in the wall gang when they were knocking off a bunch of stuff. But he got so much heat, he got put in the book, which the book was
Lefty was a great odds maker. That's how he got involved. Right. But Tony Spilotro, Sam Giancana made the mistake. He sent Spilotro to oversee all this. Nick Nitti and I had that money working like a fine Swiss watch. We moved so much money out of Vegas over 15 years, it was ridiculous. But they sent in Spilotro. He destroyed it all, like John Gotti destroyed it all. They wanted to be on camera and grandstand, and they had to be kept reminding. This is a private organization, a secret organization. Stay out of the news.
Yeah.
And then when he shot up my house, that was it. Because Rex Bell was the district attorney. He didn't realize that on my cul-de-sac. Rex Bell, the district attorney, had helicopters in the air in a minute when they had gunshots around his house. But it was my house next door.
God.
But it's just crazy. Crazy
yeah.
times.
Well, like I said, that connection between the truth and real life and the movies that are made, or the movies that were made that were not real life, like The Godfather, but they were, but, you know, not actual stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you right. just, I can't wait to see this 10-part TV series. If you're just doing the show, the great Gianni Russo, his book, if you haven't read it yet, Hollywood Godfather, go buy 10 copies, give them to your friends. You'll be their favorite. And but the movie, how are you going to, what stories are you going to use? Have you decided yet how you're going to, obviously, it has to start at the beginning.
Like I said, Nick Vallelongo, who's obviously brilliant, he won 2 Oscars for Green Book. And I love what he did, because they had me, myself, being interviewed as Gianni Russo, you know, and they make it like I'm 80 by the time it comes out. And he tells the interviewers, what are you talking about this stuff for? Don't you know what happened to me in Vegas? And we cut to Vegas
Great.
With a younger actor playing me. And it's the whole thing with the casino and all the movie stars and Sinatra in there. And then the guy I kill. And go right to Pablo Escobar, and that's how the first hour starts. It really gets you intrigued, because now you find out I played Carlo the Godfather, I'm doing the secret. I mean, all of the connections, you got John Gotti, even Elvis, it has an appearance in it, because Elvis used to come to my show.
I mean, this is going to be great.
I mean, Nick did an unbelievable job, and then we have the Bible for the 10 others, and now because of Colin Wilson just got nominated for 15 Oscars, on Emmys for Star Wars.
Right.
Mandalorian. That's him.
So
now they're saying, well, how many more can you do with this guy? They said the guy has 65 hours, as I do right now. 65 episodes up of stories that don't even relate to the book.
Yeah. No, it's going to be
now
hard.
Now they're going to option that.
That's great. When will we get to see it? When do we know yet? Is there a date?
Well, once this pandemic, we're ready to go. They're casting right now. In fact, they had meetings yesterday with Mark Wahlberg, who wanted to be me years ago. I met with Mark 100 years ago with David O. Russell, and him were doing The Fighter. I went up to Boston, and that's how long this has been in the work. David O. Russell wrote 72 pages. I mean, this guy was a brilliant director and writer. Won so many Oscars, and now here we are again. Mark, to me, is a great choice for me in, you know, like my 40s and 50s. And then the way he wrote it, I narrate a lot of it. It's going to be a lot like Goodfellas with the narration. That's Mark Canton, who did Goodfellas. He's the producer of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait. I think it's going to be, that's the way to do it. I think that has to be that way, to lend the truth and let people understand that it's just not a story. This is the truth. These are your stories, your life.
Well, I think Colin Wilson said it the best. And I was in a production meeting, and he said, here's what we have here. For the people who don't know it, I say, you got to read it. Anybody that's on this set, I want them to know. He says, this is Forrest Gump meets the mob. Movie actors, politicians, you name it, this guy did it. I think it's a perfect
it's
example.
It's true. No, it's a walk through history. It really is. It's listen, I'm so happy to hear your voice. I'm glad you're well. I'm glad everybody's doing good around you. I can't wait. I'm hoping this thing, we get past it by Thanksgiving, and I'm able to come out and see my friends in New York and see you as well, and I would love to get together for some dinner.
Well, I have a funny feeling that we all are thinking the same thing. I think once the election's over, the pandemic is over. political football.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you Thanksgiving, probably the Friday after.
Yep.
Or Saturday after.
Sure.
Tuesday the weekend, because yep. I like to have it with my grandchildren. I have 10 grandchildren now.
Yeah, great. Amazing. Yes, so, absolutely.
Okay, I mean it. My dining room sits 16. I got a 6-school bar in my house with disco and everything else. So we'll just be here for the day and the night.
Beautiful. A great, it's
thank
again.
Thank you so much. And everybody in Kansas City, I love it, man. Go to Mother's. Is Mother's still there?
No, it's gone now. It's I mean, it's been gone a while, but I remember all those clubs, man, and, you know, and die. Back in the day, you know.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, Butchie Savella, Corky's, you know, nephew, he ran a lot of great clubs.
I remember The Edge was one. We used to. And you know, just a bunch down in the market, and everybody was down there and down in the river and the River Key area. It's it's crazy how fast the time goes by and how much everything changes. Well, look, I'm so glad you're the one telling the story, though, Jenny, because it's an important part of our history, and it is a great story as well. And it is a story.
Oh my
of,
God! Just the Kennedy assassination, how he got elected. Nobody really knows that story.
Yeah.
I'm the only one that really named the guy that shot him. Johnny Roselli shot him. He was the kill shot. Oswald bullet hit the governor.
No, I'm telling you guys listening, you've got to read this book, even if it's not your thing to read. You should, or go to the podcast and find the podcast, man. Hollywood Godfather podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, all the digital platforms, all of it's there. But you should really take a listen to this. It is a walk through history. It includes a lot of Kansas City, and it is a story about triumph and coming from a hard place, from being in a polio hospital to, you know, meeting Frank Costello to this walk through today. It is an absolute, you're right, it's Forrest Gump meets the Godfather.
On steroids.
Yeah. All right. I love you. I hope you're well.
Hey, thank you so much, man. Yeah, God bless you all. Stay healthy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.